Another email that I recently got, I wanted to kind of catch up with here. It described this super huge initiative to replace a lot of back end, like core systems in an operations area. And the listener was a little frustrated with it because, and I'll paraphrase here just a little bit, while it seemed like there was some progress being made in some of the areas, there was really like this lack of a sense of accomplishment, like from a usability standpoint. It seemed like things were maybe getting completed, but nothing was really getting done. And so when you're not really moving towards a completed end state, it does bring forth a lot of confusion and a lot of frustration, of course. And so as we exchanged emails, I realized exactly what she was describing and asking me about to get my thoughts on, because we've all been there. And so before we journey today, a quick review before we get started on this key to a successful product practice in agility. We're in the middle of what I consider these six keys of having that successful practice. And so key number one in review again is dedicating that personal backlog time for yourself. You got to spend time in your backlog. That's the big deal. You're going to develop your roadmap. You'll find ranking and you'll ensure readiness when you do this. And so those are those three R's of the area of focus that I talked about. Now, to develop and maintain your backlog, you're not going to be able to make all of these decisions like in a vacuum. And you're also going to probably see some kind of hijacking of your backlog, right? And so you may think it's ranked here and it's a priority, but then somebody else jumps in. And so, for example, if you're experiencing these frequent and abrupt changes in your priorities, and you know that you've got to have help and feedback loops from other people to make sure the backlog is updated and ready to go, you can probably help reduce a lot of that by ensuring those proper feedback loops with the right people more frequently. And so we talked about that last time, key number two. That's the share care time that we talked about. So today that brings us to key number three, and it's a big one. I think you'll want to tune in as we journey together. So sit back, buckle up. Let's get the planet product owner. What I was able to infer from the email is that the organization had the tendency to have like 147 people in a big meeting a couple of times a week. And somebody apparently was responsible for presenting user stories that needed to be done so they could just kind of move forward through this program of work. And they felt like the biggest priority to handle at any given time was found in this or in a handful of user stories. So they focus on like a set of stories, but weren't actually providing some complete and usable function at the end. And so there's an obvious problem with this. We're not valuing working software when we do this. In a lot of regards, it's probably one of the biggest anti-patterns that I see with a lot of large organizations today with larger efforts, but it's also kind of showing its head in smaller ones too. And so what happens when we're just working on this kind of mindset or working with this kind of mindset is that we're seeing outputs over outcomes. So if you go back to the sprint planning episode, which, by the way, I think is probably the most important actual ceremony event, feedback loop, whatever you want to call it, for a product partner or a product manager or a product owner. This is where I point out to you that if you ask for a collection of stories and tasks, that's what you're going to get. So, for example, I can tell my kids to go pick up their clothes and make up their bed and throw all those empty water bottles in the recycle bin and clear off their nightstand, but that's probably not going to get me a clean bedroom. They'll do those tasks. Well, at least I think maybe they would. So they can certainly do that work. But all I'm going to get with that is an output. But if I explain to them that the outcome was to have a clean bedroom, then they may have to go out and figure out those tasks and what it's going to take to execute to get there, right? So see, as a product owner or product manager, we want to make sure that we're providing the product goal, not just user stories. And I've said it before, while I love user stories and all they could do for us, it's a tool that we can use to qualify what we're asking. But remember, in the spirit of the user story, it's a promise to have a conversation. So that's why I also hate user stories, because they're abused so much in the organizations that we serve. We think we can't work unless we have a user story, right? And the dev team members expect you, as the product owner, to author all of them. So we have the tendency to just throw user stories over the fence because we're asking for the task or we're being tasked for the ask, whatever it is, right? So the thing is the user story, we can use this as a tool to describe behaviors that we expect. What do we want to have delivered from the system, from the user perspective? And if we can shift our mindset from all the ask of the task and move forward describing new or changed behaviors we want to have adopted, then we're probably going to be in better shape. See, a lot of times we get into the habit of this story tossed over the team, right? And so we need a story. We need a story. I need a story. Here a story, there a story, everywhere a story, story. User stories, when they're not treated with respect and with thoughtfulness, they just become work and they get dumped into the collection of work, collection of stories and tasks. So this kind of thing works out like for me, if I'm like on a rainy Saturday and all I want to do is just kind of clean the garage and do some organizing and listen to some music, just going to take my time, piddle around, look at some stuff on the wall. Oh, in the drawer, I found this, you know, old bicycle pump or whatever, bicycle tire pump. And I can move this over here for a minute, clean it up, take a break, see something else I want to move around. But at the end of the day, I'm happy with that because I really had no objective. I just wanted to get out of the house and piddle, just to be busy, like sifting through the arts and crafts drawers my kids have compiled over the years. Just wanted to kind of get that thing cleaned up a little bit, right? And so on those rainy Saturdays, my input really is that I just want to listen to some good old folk music, get out of the house, be busy. I didn't really have an outcome. There is some value in it, but it's personal value for me. And I certainly didn't serve any of the world's problems or any of my storage issues. I just really wanted to move some things from one place to another. So there was an output. I moved a toolbox from one side of the garage to the other, and it served no more purpose than that. It's not like I cleared up a lot of added storage or anything like that. So I actually created more of an issue when I did it because I didn't consider the fact that I would need to move something else over into that place that made more sense to put it there. Now, on the other hand, when I went out and bought my car, I bought a new car, I wanted to be able to park it comfortably in my somewhat small garage, so I had a goal. And I knew that I had to be very intentional when I looked around that garage to make space for it. So I targeted certain areas to make sure that I was able to complete these small areas by the end of the session so I could comfortably park that car in the garage. So when I got done, it was all set. I felt good about it because the actual end state was delivered. I started with a great input. The objective was pretty clear. I needed the outcome that I imagined. So as I learned, as I was navigating through the garage there, I figured out that I had to have this here, this there, and these are the things that I had to do in order to meet this goal. So I assigned myself the task at that point. I had a great end state defined up front. And obviously, I knew all of my NFRs. You know, how far was this? How much room did I have from front to back, you know, et cetera. So what's the point? Well, we have to think about outcomes, not just outputs. The best way that I've found to protect against this is to start where we are and begin to describe behaviors that we want to see. We have to think in terms of outcomes. So if we think about the user behavior that we're looking to add, change, or have ultimately adopted, then we're going to have a much better handle on telling the story and humanizing that, not just writing a story and throwing it over the fence. When Scott parks his car in the garage, then there's enough length for the car and the doors to open. So when the who does the what, then the result. That's my scenario, right? And so now I've just described the simple behavior that I want to see adopted, moved, added, or changed. Now, in a recent episode, we talked already about thinking. And thinking leads to actions, and actions lead to results. And so in the product owner or manager world, thinking becomes that input. When we put the input into a process, we get some output. Output should be used to drive outcomes, and finally, outcomes create impact. Now, we want to have this module complete. So when the user completes this step, we can use their input as an output to serve as an input for another step, right? We're thinking of that precondition, trigger, postcondition mindset again. So we want to test that in initial step, that small end-to-end state, that outcome. We want to test, make sure that it satisfies our need and that it's implemented properly. It's potentially shippable. If I just worked on a story for module one and then another story for module two and then maybe another one for one and maybe for three, all I'm getting is outputs. I'm not getting outcomes. Nothing's usable, complete, or valuable. So now, key number three for having a successful product practice in agility. Defend against a story by story by story approach. It's really important. So far we're halfway there through the six keys. All right, so hang on, next week I'll deliver number four. We do this by continually thinking through end-to-end flows with that preconditioned trigger and post-conditioned mindset. This is going to prevent you from only having a collection of stories and tasks and work, and it's going to enable you to actually deliver value. Even if you're simply passing along requests, they will still be formed by the basis of this mindset. So if somebody just insists on pushing stories to you to do this story or write this story, push back. Ask them why. Why in the sense of which outcome will this output serve? The more you have these conversations, share care time, the more people will realize the value and the why and why it's important to focus on outcomes. And, you know, let's be honest for a minute. I mean, I believe people want to be busy. I believe they just want to work. I believe they want to show their time. I get all of that stuff. But that's why you're here. That's why you're the master vision caster and the rock star product owner that you are, or that you're becoming anyway. And you have to help them understand the mission. The more you share your thinking patterns, the more they're going to learn. And that's what we're all doing here, right? We're learning on the journey. So for me, I still did the work, but I did the right work to reach my goal. I was happy to clean the garage. I was going to do those tasks anyway. But now my mindset was different. I could park my car there, my new car. And I was sure glad that I got it in there before the big storm. It led to a huge impact for me because I heard it held a lot in a lot of places, and that would have been a really ugly outcome for my brand new car. So until next time, tell a friend and have a safe, fun, lean journey, my friends.